Experience Interviews with the Experts, brought to you by Dressage Mentor. I am your host, Chris Garrett, and today we have Holly Mason, who is an international specialist in biomechanics of horse and rider. She's also the author of It's Never Too Late to Learn to Improve to Make a Difference in Your Riding. She's lectured on the biomechanics of the horse and rider at Tufts, Cornell, Ross University Vet Schools, as well as being a featured presenter at Equine Affair in both Ohio and Massachusetts. She teaches clinics throughout the U.S., which is actually how we met. We met at a clinic in Colorado. So welcome, Holly. I'm so glad you're with us today.
Yes, very nice to talk to you again. That was a wonderful clinic in Colorado. It was a lot of fun.
It really was. I learned a lot from you, and I would let our listeners get to know you a little bit. So tell us about how you got started in horses.
Well, it's a pretty standard story in the beginning. I started riding when I was about 8 and, you know, just rode consistently for a long time. My dad was a designer in New York, so I wound up going to Rhode Island School of Design. And after I got out of school, I ran into a friend who just started me back into the whole riding world again. And next thing I knew, buying a horse, you know, getting exposed to dressage, and eventually wound up with Carl Mikulka, who is an alumnus of the Spanish Riding School, who wound up kind of in my backyard in Massachusetts. And, you know, that was just such an enormous difference in my life, because there's all this wealth of technique and exercises. And as I went forward, I got more and more interested in biomechanics. So now I really know why those exercises work from a exercise physiology standpoint. So as you know, I try to bring all this kind of complicated information to people in a simple, graspable way. So that's how I kind of wound up where I am now.
Now, I've heard the term biomechanics in a lot of different areas and ways. Can you describe just what does that mean, biomechanics? What are you talking about?
Well, basically, I mean, the word is obviously a combination of biology and mechanics. And so it's a way of seeing motion. What is the science of motion? So all of us are just muscle and bone that move through space, and so are horses. We're all just mammals. But biomechanics really gets more into what is moving and what isn't moving at various points. So certainly as we go into the exercise physiology of horses, you know, everybody wants their horse to be moving better, but very often the rider is kind of an impediment to that. And I try to work with the rider as much as I do with the horse, because horses do become almost perfect mirrors. They do.
Oh, man, that's kind of a scary thought. Now, your book called It's Never Too Late. Explain where you got that title and what do you mean by it's never too late?
Well, certainly as I travel around to teach, I get an awful lot of not terribly young ladies who go, oh, I'm too old, blah, blah, blah. And it's really too bad, because when you study brain neurology, you realize that our brains continue to build dendrites and synaptic connections throughout our whole lives. And it's kind of the science behind use it or lose it when it comes to the brain. And so I became very dedicated to helping people, especially women, understand, you know, you really can learn this. And part of the reason it's difficult in your past to learn it is because people haven't explained it very well. So that's a lot of my focus, as you know, is trying to break it down into bits people can understand, rather than kind of going on with the same phrases over and over, which people are not getting, so repeat them some more, maybe they'll get some.
Being a baby boomer myself, that's one of the things I love about your work, is it does give us old folks some hope to keep going.
Well, you know, old is relative. You know, it really is. It's a way of thinking about yourself, and you know, there's just so many little things that start to unlock when you start to feel, for instance, the rhythmic moments in the horse, and someone explains when you're supposed to be doing something, not legs, 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 which doesn't really help very much. And once those things start to become clear, then you have more tools and you go, ah, I can problem solve this myself, which is really one of my goals, is to help people be better problem solvers when they ride. And then it's just more fun. I mean, come on.
Yeah, it is. I absolutely agree. So yeah. On your current focus of your clinics, is it about that problem solving? Is that what you're teaching?
That's always what I'm teaching. But more than that, within the last year, I've started working on a clinic symposium format called The Secrets of Bending. And in all my travels, I find that most people, the one thing that they will admit at almost any level of riding, they don't really understand enough about bending. And I decided to just really focus on that. And, you know, I have had a lot of very prestigious people say to me that things like the rib cage of the horse doesn't bend, or, you know, horses, I thought it was shown that horses don't bend. And I'm like, wait, we're all vertebrates. We're all mammals. We have, you know, a spine, and the spine always bends to a greater or lesser degree. So I'm really trying to help people think a little bit more from the spine out, which it's pretty easy to do when you're sitting on the horse. If you're going to try to be on that curve of the circle, the spine of the horse has to be on the curve of the circle, and then the legs kind of draw the circle. So that's easy to say, well, you should bend your horse, but there's a lot of exercises that involve how that really happens.
I did want to share with our listeners an experience I had watching you. The clinic that I was at in Colorado, there was a lovely bulldog quarter horse, buckskin, looked like we should be out chasing cows with her. That was being ridden
by
just a beautiful dressage rider who had a really good connection with the horse. He certainly was not what you would think of as a dressage horse. And I remember writing a little article when I said she looked like a loaf of bread on sticks, because she was just this block of horse. No
right.
bend at all, absolutely just a block. And I watched you from the ground work that horse and bend her gently, comfortably. The horse was happy. Bend her this way, bend her that way. And then that girl got on, and all of a sudden that was a completely different horse. And it was in minutes. I was so shocked by that. I would never have imagined that little loaf of bread actually had a bend in the middle. And it was so impressive. I just wanted to let our listeners know this is not just something in theory or something that...
No, it isn't at all. As you mentioned, I do a lot of work in hand. And there's two things. Number one, for me, you know, being sort of a horse trainer as detective, I'm to figure out where the places are that don't work very well and so forth and so on. But also, it just allows me to have a daily conversation with horses. You know, horses have attitudes someday, and you know, you kind of want to know, what horse do I have today? But the basic premise of the work in hand is you're trying to work the head, neck, and shoulders, back can free up so the hind legs can do their job. So, you know, God, over 35 years ago, Carl Mikulka said to me that the head, neck, and shoulders of the horse are so powerful they can stop the action of the back. And I've known that all this time, but now I know really why that happens. And, you know, there's just so much to how self-carriage actually works.
That's what I was going to ask you, is how does bending work improve self-carriage? I know I've seen it happen, but I'm not grasping exactly what it is I'm seeing. Is that something you can describe in words?
You know, I can certainly try. It's bigger than L, you know, but at the same time, they're basic principles. So basically, the way that the horse elevates in the forehand, which is the self-carriage part where they come up in the front and then the hind legs start to curl, the pelvis curls under, the hind legs fold up, and there's more spring in the back. You're really looking for the horse to be looking between the forelegs and not dumping into their chest muscles. So when horses pull, they're really using all the lower neck muscles and their enormous chest muscles. So we want them to lift a little further back, directly under the withers, and then the withers come up, and their muscles in front of the withers and behind the withers that sort of actually pull the front of the horse up. It's kind of, it attaches into that long ligament that goes from between the ears to the tip of the tail. So there's really a physiological way to explain what happens. And so, okay, the horse should come up in the front. But then there's the whole thing of how do you create the suppleness so the horse can do that if they've been like the little mare locking in the chest, using all the neck muscles, going, boy, can I pull, just watch me. Another thought there. Dogs pull the same way horses do. They use their lower neck muscles and neck muscles. So it's,
well,
it's,
I know horses don't have a collarbone per se. Do dogs? Are they built the same?
They're pretty much built the same way. When I did the lectures at the vet schools, I have a skeleton of a dog that I put next to a horse because they're really very similar. And, you know, I've always made the joke that, you know, horses are just big dogs.
Yeah.
But they really are.
Not, yeah.
You know, it takes a while to really get into that, but it's completely true. But so another piece of the pulling thing or just not being in self-carriage is what's happening at the pole. So all of the things that come together when you ask the horse to step sideways create opportunities for curving the spine. So when a horse steps sideways in the front, they properly, you know, and they're not just throwing themselves sideways, they really have to lift in the front. They have to lift in those muscles between the forelegs and in front of the withers and behind the withers. So that's the thing that you're asking them to do that allows this thing to happen. Now, by extension, when they start to cross over in the front and the back, then the abdominal muscles come into play, and that brings back up and helps the pelvis curl under for them to get the spring in the hindquarters. So the horse has to turn the head at the pole very softly. The skull will actually rotate on the spine. In the USDF parlance, we call that flexion at the pole. And then the shoulders have to be laterally soft, and then that frees the back up, opens up the rib cage so it can bend more, and then the hind legs can flow under. You know, again, like you saw it, once you've seen it work, you go, oh, I wish someone had explained that to me 30 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I have a very specific question for you in relation
okay.
to this. As you know, I raise Andalusian horses, and they have a knack for appearing round and appearing on the bit, not really in such, just because of the way they're built. They have a very high neck set, like a Parisian or Andalusian, as you know, and
yep.
they're usually very flexible and full, so they can have this beautiful, what appears to be a nice round frame, when actually they are complete hollow in the back, just by how they're built. So
right.
in doing the work that you do, can they fool you? Can a horse built like that still fool you, or do they have to use their muscles and spine the way you're expecting of them, no matter how they're built, no matter what breed or physiology?
Yeah, it absolutely it works with all of them. You know what I mean? I have
okay.
so many animals that I see everywhere that, you know, everybody's really out there about training first level. You know, and that's when you're starting to approach the collection thing, which you're talking about. It looks like they're there. I do find about the more broke breeds that they can just so slightly, you know, push their sternums forward and in their chest muscles. They do it very quickly, very subtle. So that's the part where we have that lateral flexibility, the sideways flexing their shoulders, and they can move over even the width of a hoof at any time you ask them. You know, that's how you correct that. And also, again, you really have to watch the turn of the head, because if they're not flexing at the pole, that gives them a little bit of power in the lower neck, and it gives them a little bit of power in the chest. And, you know, again, it's so deceptive because they're so glorious even when they're wrong, right?
That's the problem. It's tough to see. And usually I can feel it, but not always. You always feel it at the canter. You can really feel that stiffness at the canter. But at
right.
the trot, it can be so deceptive. And I'll think I've got this nice frame, and all of a sudden it's like...
Really look to that little turn of the head. You know, the great masters used to say, see the inside eye. I said, okay, mm-hmm. my brain went. But really what happens is the skull rotates on the top of the neck. And so it should have, the ears stay level. There's no twisting of the neck or unlevelness of the ears. But the inner ear comes back toward you. And you can help this by a little bit raising your inside hand. Now, every mm-hmm. horse has a different place they will actually release in that turn of the head to the inside. So, you know, that's kind of the homework, is finding the places where you can get that release. So you start with a broader gesture of lifting the inside rein, and then little by little the rein can be a little bit more long, and maybe then you just close your fingers and you get that turn. But that's usually where the locking starts, and then, you know, it's kind of like all the dominoes down. You know what I mean? That
yeah.
if that part isn't right, then they take advantage in the neck and into the chest, and then the back goes down, and then the hind legs are out behind, and boy, it's so much healthier for them. I mean, this whole business in dressage that we make the horse's nose come in and make them, come round, whatever, however you want to describe that, this is not some just arcane thing that dressage riders have dreamt up. This is the most efficient way for a horse to carry a rider. So certainly you'll see, really good Western riding. It's all very balanced. They're correctly in position to carry a horse properly. And, the Europeans, it doesn't really matter what discipline they do. They all start with dressage because it's the first balance point for the best way for a horse to carry a rider.
And as most people know, dressage just means training.
That's right. And
yeah,
and a lot of it is just doing it. And one of the things I like to encourage people to do is to experiment because, you're really not going to break the horse. If you move the horse all around, and you think, well, I'm moving the horse sideways, but they're kind of, darting sideways. Well, that's no good. So slow it down or bring everything back to the walk. I mean, one of the things that we know now about all of physiology is that your muscles should warm up slowly. And, the old paradigm of three times around on a long rein and now we start trotting for the horses, that really isn't in keeping with what we know about proper warm-up. If you spend some time making what I call in my art way, curvilinear lines with your horse, and that just means like little shallow serpentines or deeper serpentines or circles, and always when you're on the outer loop of a curve, just ask for some sideways steps. It doesn't have to be a lot to get a good result. And sometimes, horses are just having one of those days, well, I'm not really doing this. So, then some whip taps on the hind leg, and I don't mean nailing them. I mean tap, 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 till they decide they will move away from the tapping. And that's the whole thing that you do with the whip, and it's also the thing I do when I work in hand, is I'm trying to teach them to move away from light tapping. So that when it's called annoyance tapping. It's really out of the natural horsemanship world, and it's really wonderful. And so you tap, 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 and then they finally move, and then you have to have the discipline to stop tapping. They did what you wanted.
Yeah.
So then, when you're in the saddle and they're not quite doing it, that's when you back up how you're shifting your weight to make them go sideways. You shift to the outside and add a little tapping either on the shoulder or the hind leg. That's another thing I do an awful lot of is tapping the shoulder in the saddle because, again, the example you were giving me earlier of your horse, if you just move those shoulders over a little bit, you'll be amazed at what will happen. I've even started another piece of my bending stuff is really make people understand how much their thighs and knees and upper calves should be in contact and how much you can bend the horse behind the withers, behind the shoulders, and, especially when they go to the left because they want to be a little right front dominant and push right to left, you can bend them behind the shoulder with your lower thigh, your knee, and the upper part of your calf.
And I like the idea of the leg being the anvil you bend around, too. I've always found that a helpful visual.
Yeah, it is, except that if the horse isn't flexible enough, it kind of doesn't work, That's the part, There has to be flexibility. And so, again, if we take a little bit more of the dance idea or Pilates or any of those things, the goal is really to make the horse as ambidextrous as possible. And therefore, that means we have to move more ambidextrously. It's just a tall order. Humans are very right-sided because of the world we live in, and most people are right-handed, and computers, and the way we cross our legs, and all these different kinds of things are all contributory to does the left side work well enough on the human? Therefore, how does that work with the horse? So, that's just another whole part of my mission is trying to get people to understand what they need to move when and why. And once the why is there, I just find that they go, yeah, it's really fun.
Then it makes sense, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
So I know you just published your revised second edition of your book, It's Never Too Late, and I have the first edition. Now, what have you added? A new copy?
Well, that's a good idea. basically, what I did is I added, you know, sort of I took apart positional things a little bit more, just like I just talked about. So people know that, you know, for instance, the thigh is long and the knee is soft, so you can bring your lower legs back and things of that nature. I have some more visuals about how sidestepping works. Years ago, I was able to photograph the equine skeleton at Tufts, and I was able to bring some of that material back in to show the, you know, from the skeleton out once again how it works. And then I added a couple pages about training in the woods, which is one of my favorite things. And I have quite a lot of video footage in the can and a whole thing in my head, because I think probably my next book should be an e-book, but that's a big goal right now. But right now, the new book, the new revised edition of my book, it's probably about 20 pages longer, but I got the things in that I really felt I had left out on or I didn't do in the first round, and got some better visuals working, et cetera.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing it. Where can folks get this?
Basically off my website, which is dressagebydesign.com. On the website, you know, I also had produced a DVD before I did the book, which has a wonderful little warm-up for humans to get your body warmed up every day and figure out where am I stiff, as well as later asking yourself about your horse, where is my horse stiff today? So there's some real good clues in that. And again, at dressagebydesign.com, I have a lot of my published articles, you know, which includes pieces from Dressage Today, Practical Horseman, and one of my favorite publications, British Dressage Magazine, which the people there have been wonderful supporters of my work for an awfully long time.
Your DVD, the Focus on Flexibility DVD, I know you said you had the warm-up for humans, but tell me a little more about the exercises you have in there for horses. Can we learn how to do what you do from that DVD?
Well, one of the things I think that's really helpful in watching things, whether you're watching horses live or on, you know, on video, is that you get to see what the thing looks like. And I think, you know, basically leg yielding out on a circle, well, that's great. You know, I sit here and say, you should leg yield out on the circle as much as you can. But in the video, I show that, and I talk through what I'm doing, you know, how I bring my inner shoulder back, how I use my hip, you know, those kinds of things. So it just gives people more visual reference, you know, to where they're going to go with all of this. And then there's some exercises that, you know, hopefully are easy to see and fairly easy to execute. And then at the end I cover, you know, some basic stretches and massage you can do for the horse in the barn, which a lot of people know these things. But, again, it's just another little nudge. You should do these things. They really, really help. When I take on new horses in training, one of the things I try to do is every week get out the liniment and just go all over the horse. And that does two things. Number one, it says to the horse, you know, I really care about you. You know, I'm really going to take this time to make you feel good. And secondly, it really, you get to feel under your hands what needs to be looser. And it's just really good to get your hands on your horse rather than just sitting in the saddle. I mean, it's all very positive.
Gosh, I love that. I haven't seen that DVD, and I would really like to. What other goals do you have for your work? Do you have specific things you're going to be working on next?
Well, again, I'm just trying to travel as much as I can and get a lot of this information out there. I have such success with riders, as you know, when I give clinics. And if people are willing to sign on for a weekend, I like to do a lecture from all the wonderful drawings that I have that I've both commissioned, and then I found even better sources of great visuals now to expand the Secrets of Bending symposium format. And I'm just trying really hard to get the word out, which is why I totally appreciate you taking the time for this interview, because every little bit helps. You know, they're real easy answers, you know, if people can sit still long enough and figure out what they are. And it's not really about sitting still. It's about actively being engaged in your riding. And, you know, I just want more people to be having a better time. I mean, lots of people work very hard, and they could be getting so much further if they just had a little more information to work with.
Well, and having been to your actual clinic, and I went to both days, and I learned so much, I can say confidently that for our folks who are considering having you out for a clinic, it's well worth it. It's, you know, it's one of the foundations of everything, and it doesn't matter what the discipline or what kind of horse or your age or the horse's age. This is such
exactly.
a huge piece of the whole puzzle that I was really grateful to have the chance to get to know you, and I'm glad you were able to come with us today.
Well, this was my pleasure. It was just a delight. Thank you so much.
And again, for our listeners, you can contact Holly Mace at dressagebydesign.com, and she does have an email link there, too, if you want to contact her for clinics. And I highly recommend the book. It's Never Too Late. I haven't seen your Focus on Flexibility DVD. If you're a visual learner, that's probably the best way to go to really understand what she's doing or have her out for a clinic. So, Holly, I'm really grateful that you've been doing this work for so long for the benefit of the horse and for people. And I wish you the best of luck. I can't wait to see the new edition of your book.
Well, I hope we meet again soon, and thank you so much.
This is Chris Garrett, Wow Factor Radio. Bye-bye.